Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And during the break, we were running a lot of best of Total Celebrity Shows, and I know this will definitely land in the best of interviews for sure. So I'm so excited to welcome the program from Bravo, Million Dollar Listing Miami, Chris Levitt. Chris, thanks for calling in. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm happy that you had me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you on the show as well. And always talking about specifically, you're going to provide us some of these real estate trends, because it's funny when you're off air, you're telling me I'm basically getting ready to go to another listing. So, Chris, kind of tell us what you were doing before the show and pretty much what you're doing on the show. But did you ever think at that time before going on reality TV that you'd be doing something like this?
You know, I always thought in the back of my head growing up I would be on TV at some point. I don't know, just sort of I had that in my inner thoughts. I just was always there. And I didn't know it would be about the job that I would end up doing. So that's the coolest part of it, is that, you know, I'm able to, you know, being on a show about real estate and about any business that you do is almost like free advertising in a way. Because they're getting the viewers are getting to see you in action and what you do and how you operate. And it's almost like an interview out to the world. And I've had so many people call me during the show, after the show, saying, you know, I really like the way that you operate. I love the way that you sell. I like your style, and I want to hire you and sell my apartment or house. And these are people that I've never met. They just call me. They're in wherever they are. They're in New York. They're in Minnesota, whatever it is. They happen to have homes, you know, down here in Florida. And now that the show's airing in Canada and England and Europe, I'm getting calls from there. So it's really amazing. You know, you couldn't, as a broker in Florida, do enough mailings or outreach to an audience like that. It's impossible. So, I mean, the show is an amazing platform. It was fun to do. It was, you know, a lot of work, obviously, but the benefits that I'm reaping from it are incredible.
Well, it definitely seems incredible in so many ways, and it's interesting what you're talking about with the reality, and I have questions definitely regarding that, because you're going to have to be yourself as what you are as a real estate broker. You don't go out and in specific ways and embarrass yourself on television, because then those clients aren't going to come calling you. So it's a great advertisement, but some people fall flat on their faces involving reality.
Right.
So Chris, do you have any background in entertainment before you were a real estate broker, an agent, and all these different things? Were you involved in the entertainment field ever before that?
I've never been involved in the entertainment field in terms of working, but I went to the University of Southern California in California, obviously, USC film school. And I fell into the film school because I had to pick a major. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And they have the best film school in the country. And I've always been fascinated with behind the scenes and editing and producing and directing and all of that. So I actually went to the film school and studied film for 4 years. So I definitely have a behind the scenes knowledge and experience, but never in front of the camera. But, you know, I just let the cameras go, and I tried to pretend that they weren't there, because I wanted to be, when I set out to do this, I wanted to be as authentic as possible. I wanted people to see the real me and not a manufactured version. And so I deliberately said things and was the way that I am so I wouldn't be edited, but there'd be no way you could edit it any other way. So.
And you're trying to live the person. You understand how reality TV works from studying film and understanding the media and all that. So that really helped you, that experience, once you finally decided to do this. And and so you went from USC film school to being involved in banking and brokerage and things like that. How did that happen?
Into banking, did you say?
Yeah, banking, brokerage, broker.
No, just real estate.
Right into real estate.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. I went right from California, moved to New York the day I graduated, and wanted to get into New York City real estate immediately. That was my last year of school, that was sort of my passion to get into real estate. So didn't do the film route, routes. I did not want to be a PA. I did not want to work for somebody else. I did not want to answer to anyone. You know, I wanted to be my own boss, and that's the beauty of being in real estate. You know, so I interned throughout college for Paramount Pictures, for all these really nasty, mean producers and directors, and they were horrible. And I said to myself, I will never get into this industry. I will not, you know, work for someone else and be a slave for 2 years while I build up my business. I want to start making money immediately, and real estate is the best avenue for that.
So when you started in real estate, did you have any experience selling?
You know, my parents bought and sold real estate my entire life, so I learned vicariously through them how to do it, how it's done. I interned when I was in high school for a realtor, and saw, you know, how you can build an amazing business and an amazing lifestyle. So I had already, you know, I definitely had it ingrained in my being. My grandmother was a realtor, so, you know, I had it in my blood. And it does take a certain personality, certain patience, a certain style to be successful. And I was really successful right off the bat. You know, my first listing was a $3.5 million townhouse in New York City within 3 weeks of being in the business. And they didn't know anyone. It's about, you know, just putting it out there to the universe of what you want and how you want to be successful. And it happens. I'm a firm believer in that. And that's what I applied. And that's what happened when I started out in that business.
So you put the hard work and effort in, and kind of describe the difference between being a broker and being a real estate agent for our listeners.
Okay,
out there.
Sure.
Because a lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of people use the terms sort of, they call brokers agents and agents brokers. When you're a broker, you actually are, you know, you own the company. You have a different license than an agent. It's a more extensive license to procure. You don't have to own the company if you're a broker. You can be a broker associate, which means you have your broker's license. But if you ever wanted to open up your own firm, you could, because you have that. You've earned that license. As an agent, you don't really need a broker license. You're perfectly fine just having an agent license and working under a broker. And most people, even the most successful agents around the world, work under a broker because they don't, you know, they have the name behind them. They don't have to they don't have all the overhead and all the nonsense that goes along with that. So a broker really is somebody who runs and owns the company, and an agent is one that works for the broker.
I got you. So like in certain just like local type places different real estate agencies, that's almost like a brokerage in a way, right? Am I correct?
Like the right. So like Sotheby's is a brokerage. Douglas Elliman is a brokerage. Coldwell Banker is a brokerage.
Yeah.
And people that work under those umbrellas are agents. Now, they could also be brokers because they went and got that license, but they'd be called broker associate.
So you went for starting as a real estate agent. Once you saw your success, you said, I got to go ahead and teach others what I'm doing really well. Then it sounds like, so you're a teacher as well in a way of owning and being an entrepreneur, saying others are going to come under me and I'm going to help them become as good as I am so that you could be making money while you're sleeping in certain aspects. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have a team, so definitely that is the goal. Yes.
Okay. All right. So your success in New York, what made you want to go to Miami?
You know, 13 years in New York City will do a number on the psyche. It's a tough city. It's a great city, but I was finding that I just, you know, I was sick of the weather, the climate, the extremes, the hot, hot, hot summers, the cold, cold, cold winters. And, you know, 5 years ago, the Miami market started really taking off. And I said, wait a minute, I can make as much or more money than I make in New York and live a much better lifestyle. And that's what I wanted. And that's what I moved down for. And it's so true. I mean, lifestyle here is incredible. And I think that I'm making way more money than I was making in New York. And it's also a piece of like a sort of a mindset. You know, I'm a happier person. So obviously that translates into more deals.
Exactly, because you're excited to be going throughout Miami, which is a beautiful city, and the warm weather and the parties and the whole life in New York City at times is great, but at other times it's like, oh, come on now, like Pittsburgh today it's 0 degrees, so I'm sure Miami's gotten a little cooler because of how we've had cool temperatures everywhere, unless you're going to make me feel sad. What's the temperature right now in Miami?
It's 65. I'm freezing. I'm wearing a cashmere sweater, and I'm really unhappy about it.
65, I mean, compared to zero and two-hour delays, I'll take 65 any day. Okay, so you...
Exactly. Just so your viewers know also, I sell from Miami to Palm Beach. I live in both cities. I live in Palm Beach and Miami, so I do the whole coast from Miami to Palm Beach. It's about an hour away from each other. So I service Fort Lauderdale, Boca, Hollywood, Hollandale, all of that as well.
Okay.
So I'm like I'm a South Florida agent, I should say.
Gotcha. So you're constantly going in different ways. So once you have success in Miami, how did this reality show start? How did you kind of get asked to do Million Dollar Listing? Tell us the story.
Okay.
That.
So basically, they were looking for personalities that were successful agents, you know, the combination. And somebody, I guess, when the production company came down, I've always been out there and people know who I am, kind of just making a big personality. So they called me right away. Like, I was one of the first people they called, and my casting process was very quick and seamless. You know, I filmed a little reel, and then they offered me a contract immediately.
Wow. So there you go. You get asked to do this. And like you said before, you were ready for this because you had ideas of being in the industry, meaning the entertainment industry, in the way going to school. You told yourself, you know what? I want to be portrayed like this. And a lot of people get in front of a camera and they don't know what to do. And you just acted natural.
I said, I want to be portrayed as myself. You know, I want myself to be there. I don't want to sun airs or pretend that I'm greater than I am or less subdued than I am. I'm just going to be me, you know? And, you know, a lot of people come up to me around the country and say, you know, do you really take that many baths a day? And I'm like, yes, I actually do. That's, you know, that's part of me. And that's why I was on the show, because that's like how I relax and how I get into a meditative state. So, a lot of people, you know, think that I was acting in a lot of these things, but it's not true. I was not.
And then through that process of being on the show, then being recognized everywhere, that's got to be different as well, because you can't go into a Starbucks and not think that people are going to come talk to you, which is great in your business because, oh, wow, the more people talk to you, the more opportunity to expand your business for sure.
Exactly. It's awesome. Like, I think it's fun. And, you know, people get inspired too. They're like, you know, you really inspired me. I want to be like you. How do you do it? And I love all that stuff. It's great.
So are there any drawbacks to being now a public figure as well from being on this show and just kind of where things just keep go, which your business already does, but now it's to a point where, you know, there could be paparazzi and stuff as well.
There you go. So yeah, you have to behave. You have to be a little more cognizant of what you're doing and really behave. That's number one. So you gotta know that someone's always got a camera. Someone's always got an iPhone. Take photos. So, you know, you better be on your best behavior at all times when you're out in public. So that's number one. And number two, I think, you know, my biggest problem is saying no. You know, I don't want to turn down business because I'm at a really great point now, you know, where I'm appreciative of all the press and that I get and all the accolades and recognition. And so I don't want to say no. But now I'm learning, you know, it's okay to say no. You don't have to take that listing if you really don't. Like the other day, for instance, went to a property that they called me from the show. And, you know, I just got a really bad feeling, a bad vibe. I don't know what it was. I can't put my finger on it. But I just didn't get, like, the energy of the or the house. And I, you know, graciously met with them and, you know, gave my opinion. And then I called them later and I said, I'm so sorry, but I can't list your home. I just don't believe in what you want to get is what I think it's really worth. And it was sort of my way out. But I just, you know, I used to take everything, every piece of business, and I became overwhelmed. And it's not fun when you're overwhelmed. So now I'm learning to say no and learning to that it's okay, that they're not going to not be my fans and or hate me because I didn't take their listing. In fact, they'll probably respect it.
Yeah, that's really smart. We're talking to Chris Levitt from Bravo's Million Dollar Listing Miami, and we're learning the story in kind of the backstory, things that, you know, we could talk about the show, but I really like to get to understand the person and you know, and how things are changing. But one reason we brought you on is to be this expert, and that's what you are in your success in real estate. But what do you see the trends expected in 2015? Because, again, we go through these cycles where real estate is hot and then it's really easy to sell, and then other times it's it's dying. And what's going on with our economy? So, what trends do you expect in 2015?
Well, I think, you know, I have to speak in two areas, because Miami is in a world of itself. You know, it's in a bubble. It's in a everyone from around the world wants to be in Miami. You know, Italians, people from London, people from Russia, people from Venezuela. It's one of these cities that's becoming a world-class city, like New York, San Francisco, London. Everyone wants to be there. There's a common denominator of Miami, and if you stay in a hotel, one of the five-star hotels here and sitting in the lobby, you'll see people from all around the world. Literally, it's like a churning machine year-round, because when it's summer somewhere, it's winter somewhere else in the world, and so there's always a reason to come to Miami. So in the terms of trends for 2015 for Miami, I see a continuing uphill movement in pricing. Inventory is, you're getting more inventory, but it's getting absorbed. So supply is still, while supply is high now, demand is still high. So it's evening out and things are still moving. And prices definitely have a way to go. We are a bargain compared to other world-class cities like New York, like London, like Hong Kong. So the buyers that are coming here are investing in those other world-class cities. So it's a bargain to invest in Miami right now still. Even reaching $3,000-$4,000, it's half of what it is in New York City for high-end luxury. Now, as a country as a whole, I think that you're going to see continued growth. You're going to see – are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, sorry. Okay. As a country as a whole, you're going to see, you know, baby boomers – downscaling, selling their larger homes. You're going to see millennials, which is, you know, the new wave of buyers coming into the market now, with interest rates really low. You're going to see them coming in and buying. So I think that there's going to be continued growth, steady. I don't see any decline or any of that short selling drama that occurred many years ago. So I think we're a stable real estate economy. I think that it's all about growth right now. And more supply, but yet demand as well, right behind it.
Well, I think people like to hear that, because then they know that if they need to sell their house, they can. And if they or if they're looking to just hold on to the value of real estate, like in my area in the suburbs out in the North Hills of Pittsburgh, my property continues to increase in value. So I'm happy. I'm saying, you know, so at one point in time, when the kids grow up and we want to go somewhere else, we know we can sell our house. And that's an important thing, to have real estate that is not declining in value, but increasing in value, so that you know that your investment will stay. What do you do when that doesn't happen, when you're seeing that your property is losing its value? What's your response to that, for sure?
Well, I mean, when your property loses its value, you know, that's terrible, obviously, but you have to, you know, stick with it, hold on to it as long as you can for the next wave of uptick. That's my advice. If you can hold on to it, rent it out if you have to. You know, keep it. Don't sell it at a low. Sell it at a high. Try to sell it at a high. You know, even places like that were depressed in the country, that were never, ever looking up or looking to get out of the hump, like Detroit. I mean, downtown Detroit is like one of the worst economies, is now actually coming up. I mean, you're seeing that improving. Homes rising in value there. So I think that the country is in very good shape right now, and I think it will stay that way.
That's good.
That's my belief. Take it for what it's worth, but that's how I see it.
So what's new with Chris? I mean, with the show, and also what you can tell us about the show, and then also do you have any other projects going on?
A couple of things in the works, so I would definitely stay tuned to the television in the near future. You know, things are evolving. I can't talk about them right now, but things are evolving. Business is growing exponentially. I'm also doing a lot of shows on Bloomberg and Fox, news, which is great because, you know, I'm becoming this expert in Miami where people are calling me to, you know, be on the TV shows. And these are huge, you know, the world is watching Bloomberg, not just the country. So it's an amazing exposure, a really fun tidbit that I can share with you if you have time.
Yes.
I am doing a very big project in the Palm Beach area, and that's coming on the market in the next probably 3 or 4 months. And I teased it on Bloomberg. I threw a picture of the building up there and said, you know, this is coming. You know, Palm Beach is a place to look out for in terms of a new hot spot. And I got a call from a gentleman who had seen it while he was on the treadmill at the gym, just heard Palm Beach new building, and then called Bloomberg, got a snippet, got the little piece that I had spoken about, emailed to him, and then to get my name, got my name, called my office, and I ended up selling him a $15 million apartment.
Oh, wow. That's
so
great.
The power of media is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So the more I'm out there, the better my business. And that's where I want to stay.
And that's the truth. And now with the I Believe in Business, it's definitely the more people know you, the better you are, the more you're talking to people and networking with people, the better you're going to grow your business. And the World Wide Web is the place that just makes it unbelievable if you do the right things to meet people. And Chris, the television, when you're on a great show like that, you have the great opportunity. So I know people definitely need to stay tuned. Do you see yourself someday writing a book as well, Chris? Do you think that's coming?
Absolutely. I would love to write a book. I think that it would be a disservice to write it now. I think maybe in like 2 years.
In 2 years, after the big run comes and see what happens. Do you see yourself acting ever as well? Is that something?
Why not? I mean, I'm open to that, of course. Definitely.
So that's the next step for Chris Levitt. Where's the best places we can find information on you, Chris? Where can we go?
You can go to my Facebook, @thechrislevitt.com, and that's LEAVITT, or you can find me on Instagram, @thechrislevitt, on Twitter, @thechrislevitt, hashtag, and it's always @thechrislevitt. Other Chris Levitt out there is a photographer, and he's taking up all my airspace.
Well, definitely. Fantastic. It's awesome to talk to you, and I'm glad to learn a lot about you. You know, a lot of people can hear about you all the time by just tuning into the show, but learning who Chris Levitt truly is, the person, the business person behind this and the story, it was fantastic. And then also about real estate trends, that we are in good shape, our economy, when it comes to real estate. That's great news for lots of people who want to invest in real estate or are thinking of buying a home. It's good news of selling a home. You're giving us great news for 2015. And we definitely need to check out your Twitter all the time and your Facebook and all that in the website so that we know when you're going to be on you're going to be on Fox or you're going to be on wherever in the media.
Yeah.
So best of luck to you, Chris, and I enjoyed the conversation.
Me too, so much. Thank you for having me.
All right, take care, Chris.
It.
All right, take care, man.
Take care.
I'll see you. Okay, bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network again, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this is very, very interesting, definitely an educational format in so many ways. I'm going to learn a lot about this and also a celebrity on the show as well. So I'm excited to welcome the program. 3-time Tour de France winner Greg LeMond and Dr. Mark Hom, authors of The Science of Fitness, Power, Performance, and Endurance. Guys, thanks for calling.
This is Greg. I'm good, Neil. I'm good.
All right, Greg.
Well, Dr. Mark Hom?
Yeah, hey, hi, Dr. Hom. Thanks for calling the program. Excited to learn about the book. So my first question is directed over to Greg. How did you become involved being a co-author of The Science of Fitness?
Dr. Mark Hom wrote me about 3 years ago, 3 years ago, and proposed a book on performance and cycling, and I was almost leery about somebody proposing a book, and you know, I did a book in '85 on cycling training, and it was based on physiology at the time, and it's still a pretty good book, but I've wanted to do a book that gets more to cutting through the, I guess, the junk out there and base something on science. And obviously I'm not the biologist to do that, but I understand the concept of the biology and the physiology of exercise. And when Mark wrote me, and with his background, but also what he was talking to me about and some of his samples of writing was totally in line with what I've grown to learn and have utilized in my day-to-day life.
It
was a perfect fit.
Well, definitely seems like a perfect fit because you saw what Dr. Hom's been able to do, and you saw this is a great book to co-author. What got you, Doctor, what got you interested in this subject, and why did you write this book?
Well, my wife and I were turning 50, and we were trying to get into shape. We didn't want to just slide into mediocrity and, you know, become old and out of shape. So I was looking for one book that would explain to my satisfaction as a doctor, an MD, you know, the underlying process behind exercise, but there really was no book like that. So I did my own literature research, and it would always come back to mitochondria. Mitochondria are the little power plants in each of your cells that turn your body fat and your food into energy. And not only powers your muscles, but your heart and your brain as well. And then I remembered Greg LeMond, who's my all-time sports hero. His whole career was defined by mitochondria. He not only had the best mitochondrial energy of his era, but he also had an acquired mitochondrial myopathy that forced his early retirement. So he knows the whole spectrum of how to get your mitochondria in shape, but also the effects of a mitochondrial disease.
Quite interesting, for sure. And Greg, when you heard about him being such a fan of yours and stuff, and wanted to discuss, especially what you've gone through in your career, it was a perfect fit, wasn't it, for this book?
It was something. The mitochondria, I really didn't even know what a mitochondria cell was until I was diagnosed with it, and then it's. You know, I did know a little bit of the concept of mitochondria in terms of how it produced energy, but I didn't really quite understand all the enzymes, all the stuff that goes on in the cell. And being diagnosed with mitochondria, when he talked and mentioned the word mitochondria, I have a personal interest trying to figure out, you know, I was diagnosed with a degenerative muscle disease, but I don't feel I'm not really getting worse, but I do have bouts of, if I train too hard, too long, I don't improve. And, you know, the thought is that it's the lead poisoning that is causing damage to the mitochondria, causing something not to operate properly. So I was fascinated to know and understand even more about what's happening. And I think what I loved about talking to Mark, and I read a lot, and I'm always trying to weed out myself junk. So I read a lot of stuff that are done by universities. I don't listen too much to, even trainers at top pro teams in cycling, because they're not coming from a physiology background. They're kind of doing what everybody else has done for, you know, years. And so I'm always kind of a contrarian, but a skeptic, but a skeptic's one that, you know, wants to know that it's, you know, based on science theory, and that's the way I think when Mark proposed the book, it's something I think is really vital if people are serious about their health and getting, you know, performance, but even health and fitness, to understand the biology of it, what really happens in the body when you exercise and what you should do to improve and be healthier. I always look at it, if you can have, this is a book that I think is really easy to read, and there's really no book out there that everybody can just go pick up and covers the whole spectrum like this book does. I mean, you have to be in university level to get something like this.
That interests me so much about the science of it, especially I was a professional athlete, professional wrestler, Greg and Dr. Hom, and when I trained all the time, my muscles and different things, I always wondered why, you know, after training, you're so sore at certain times, and how the recovery basis, and then when you use muscles, in different ways at different times. So, Dr. Hum, are you able to explain that a lot in your book and why we feel these certain pains after we work out, or why is it that at times, you know, we feel really great after a workout and other times we're struggling through it?
Yeah, in the physiology chapter, I go into length and talking about muscle fatigue, what causes fatigue. They used to think it was due to lactic acid, but now they don't. And we talk about the different types of fatigue. You know, a weightlifter will have a different type of fatigue than a wrestler will have a different type of fatigue than an endurance athlete. So what you were talking about with wrestling, you were probably working out so hard that you're probably causing micro tears in your muscles, but that actually encourages muscle hypertrophy. So when you have a recovery day, you're actually building your muscles stronger. Your muscles are, your cells are constantly rebuilding themselves. So it's a misconception that athletes get stronger when they're exercising. They actually get stronger on their recovery days or when they're asleep.
So, Greg,
I think if you're a world-class Olympic wrestler, there's a tendency that I see with world-class athletes to believe more is better and that you have to work out intensely every day, and a lot of, you know, people don't progress as well or fast as they could by not programming and understanding when their body needs recovery.
Absolutely, Greg. And when you were suffering, when you were diagnosed with this, was this still when you were an athlete, still being involved in the sport and stuff when you were diagnosed with
I was racing. It forced my retirement from cycling because no team was going to take me with a degenerative muscle disease. But, you know, I kept thinking for 2 or 3 years before that, my performance went down dramatically. And I think there were a couple things happening. I mean, the racing and cycling got really faster due to introduction of a drug called EPO. And if you weren't on it, you're dying because you're going as hard as you can and not keeping up. And then with the lead in me, I think that it was messing up the mitochondria, and I got to a point where I just couldn't finish races. And so I did a biopsy. I was diagnosed with it, and it forced my retirement. And it kind of still bothers me. I'm always still figuring out a cure or a solution, but I slowly gotten to a point where I kind of know the dosing of exercise that I could do and tolerate and feel good, which is not as much as anybody would think, but it's usually under an hour. But I do short, intense efforts, and I recover really well from it, and I can make improvement. But when I start going long and hard, I go backwards.
So as you were talking about, Greg, and also Dr. Hum, that a lot of athletes, they go so hard and then they don't take a break. As I was talking about, I was not an Olympic athlete, professional wrestler like the WWE. And when we would train, we trained so hard at times and we never would rest. And then, you know, work out the next day, get in the ring at night, come travel the next town, back in the weight room every day, and really didn't take that rest. And Dr. Hum, what does that do to your body at times? It just doesn't allow that muscle growth, and it doesn't allow the body to develop. And that's probably why a lot of athletes in a lot of ways fight the system and take performance-enhancing drugs. Am I correct, Dr. Hum?
Well, I think it's a normal reaction when athletes know exercise is good, so they assume more is better. But Greg has a lot of athletes come to him, and especially amateur athletes. He says he gets these triathletes who say, you know, my coach has me training 30 hours a week. Is that enough? And Greg says that's way too much because you can actually burn out. You can actually overtrain. And a lot of
your hormonal system gets wiped out. Everything that's way too much. I'm sorry.
And then a lot of athletes, you know, can suffer from exercise addiction, and that can actually have a negative effect on your performance too. Greg, when he was training for the Tour de France, he would work out so hard one day he would need a whole day to recover afterwards. So.
Summertime, 2 days a week.
Oh, wow. So tell us that kind of training, Greg, and does that help you in a lot of ways with co-authoring with Dr. Hum, understanding how you train because of how unbelievable training for the Tour de France is, right? And the time and effort, and you learn from your mistakes at times in training, right? and how you were able to get up the next day. Yeah.
Well, what attracted me to working with Mark is that, I've had some really good trainers way back when I started as a pro, and even as a new rider in the 70s. But as a pro, I really listened to my body, and I trained very intensely, not the volume that a lot of cyclists were, because I had two coaches that were they went to sports, they're basically sports physiologists. One was a scientist, and everything was based upon the basic physiology. And typically, I had 2 to 3 days of full recovery, I mean, active recovery in a week. And I think it was a professional racer. You race about 100 days a year, and if you want to perform on that day of racing, you have to make sure you're recovered. So in a typical week, if I'm racing Saturday, Sunday, after recovery, I needed almost 2 days recovered from a weekend. And it was, still I did some short efforts, intense efforts on Tuesday, but I had 1 day a week to really train and get all the stuff I needed to do and then still recover from that race. And I intuitively grew to know that recovery was critical. And I think, I do think that drugs, it's definitely a lot of these athletes are chronically overtrained, and obviously hormones are going to help them recover. I think you can perform at a very high level if you listen to your body and understand what type of training. Chronic endurance training doesn't do a lot of increase of your mitochondria that this book is about. And a lot of endurance athletes do way too much volume and without any recovery, and they slowly get slower, and a lot of them just burn out.
Right. And that's where you see a lot of athletes in the end of their career. I'm sorry to interrupt, Dr. Hum, that at the end of their careers start to really break down. Their body starts to break down in so many ways, injuries and different things. So their career is shortened. But Dr. Hum, if they read that book and understand the science of it, they'll know not to overtrain, right, Dr. Hum?
Yeah, actually, you can do a lot more for your body by doing short, intense efforts. What Greg was talking about with intensity is that our book is centered on mitochondria. They're the small dynamos, the little power plants in your cells that convert your food and your body fat into energy that your muscles, your heart, and your brain can use. And what happens with intense exercise, it causes a trigger that causes your mitochondria to multiply. So you'll actually have more dynamos to meet the energy demands, and you'll have more energy. You'll perform faster. You'll have more performance. But you'll be healthier, too, because your whole body will have more energy.
For breaking it down,
Go ahead, Greg.
Sorry.
I said it doesn't take, a lot of theories of interval training is 1 minute on to 1 minute off, but the body doesn't take a huge amount of those efforts to make improvement. It's doing those efforts. And, I do intervals where it's an interval, then recovery. And this moment, I can't maintain that same speed. I know I'm done. I've done enough workload. So it doesn't take as much because I get worried about talking about intensity. And I've had athletes that go out and every day they do the same intervals, and you could fry yourself too on that. So it doesn't take as much, but it takes intensity to improve.
And Greg,
I think I should also mention that
go ahead.
I would like also to mention our book is not just cycling specific because mitochondria are in everybody from a weekend warrior to elite athlete. It applies to runners, swimmers, cyclists, triathletes. And in fact, I have an upper body strength building system that I mentioned in the book. And I'm 52 years old, and I can actually do 35 pull-ups in a row.
That's fantastic.
I mentioned how I got up to that.
And now that's what I was going to say, Dr. Hum.
You don't just roll out of bed and do 35 pull-ups. You have to work your way up.
You're able to show the art of science between you and Greg and the process of training and showing athletes that basically they're doing it wrong in certain ways, and the trainers out there are pushing them so hard, right, Greg, to the point of exhaustion that they don't have the opportunity to maintain that performance level for a long period of time, it sounds like, and that there's lots of things that happen through that.
You're right, and I think most people don't realize, overtraining you can have. I've seen a lot of riders, and I've experienced, too, that your performance can decrease by 25%. So this idea that more is better is you not only train yourself to be more efficient going slow, let's say, if you're doing the chronic endurance training, but you're also breaking your body down and with your cortisol. Stress hormone cortisol helps break down protein for energy. And these athletes slowly get slower, and then a lot of big mistakes is when they do volume, then they try to do intensity, and their body can't handle it. So a lot of these athletes, for sure, are training way too intense. And I always look at 10K runners who do their best marathons. They're coming from 10Ks. They're able to do the high intensity when they get to marathons, and when they spend enough years doing that, they get their peak performance. They go out and do their best marathons. Then they believe they're a marathon runner. Then they start doing volume, and they end up breaking down and not performing as well. And it's common to triathletes and almost every sport. If you're a wrestler, if you're an Olympic level athlete, you know what? It's always kind of like these Germans had all this hard training programs, but the other side of it is that they had a big hormonal part of supplement. And physiology is thrown out the door when you do that. And so it's for the average person, this book is really good to understand how your body adapts and recovers.
To see those
as far as training, I always felt like some trainers feel like they hold the secrets over the athlete. So that's how they control their athletes and keep the athletes coming back to them. So our book is basically to put the athlete and the trainer on the same playing field where they both know the same information. For example, a competitive runner who helped me with the book, she said her coach said she had to finish races like within a five-second window. You know, these are, like 5K long, distance races. She had to finish within a five-second window or else she was going too hard or too slow. So that would, if she would say win the race, but be out, faster than that window, he would lay the guilt on her. Like, you ran that too fast.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah. So that's an example of how coaches can control their athlete with guilt and so forth. So this is more about the real science and what is, underlying exercise instead of guilt trips and, preconceived notions and, legend or lore.
Well, I know a lot of my listeners are athletes and definitely going to share this with a lot of younger athletes as well to read this book. And for the trainers, especially, I know some personal trainers, but the fact is if you are playing by the rules and you are not using performance-enhancing drugs, you need to learn that if you're going to do it naturally, it's to read this book, because read the Science of Fitness, because they're going to learn the science, why people, break down, why they need this rest, and what to do and to maintain great health like Greg and yourself, Dr. Hom. And I think that's very, very important. And that's great that you've been able to do this.
The analogy I have is that the mitochondria are inside your body and inside your cells. So the analogy is that you're the shepherd and you have to take good care of your flock. Now, exercise is one part, but you also have to feed them properly. You have to avoid toxicity. We have a chapter on toxicity. And also, mitochondria are the center of the aging process. So if you take care of your mitochondria, you'll live a longer and better life. So it's really a total approach. It's not just exercise. So we have a whole chapter on nutrition, a chapter on vitamins and nutritional supplements. So it's a total approach. You're an educator, so actually we dabble into the body-brain connection, how exercise helps school performance, helps people learn, helps prevent neurodegeneration as you get older.
That's fascinating, because a lot of times we're eliminating our after-school, a lot of our gym classes and stuff, and these kids aren't going out for recess anymore because of teaching, and it hurts the brain. You need to keep moving. You need to have those times to really go out there, and that's what I saw when I was an athlete, is especially in high school, that playing those sports kept my mind focused when I was in the classroom, because it was very needed.
Yeah.
And I think
we both explained that in the book. Greg had undiagnosed ADHD when he was a child, and riding a bike really helped him calm his mind.
Dramatically improved. Yeah, dramatically improved in exercise. I would recommend dropping one class from the program to exercise, because your other class will be much more effective. Students would actually take in what they're learning, and as an athlete, your brain is sharp, and my brain opened up. I mean, I think I learn more as once I started cycling than I did for years in sport, because I was, you know, distracted. My brain was, right. was always thinking of something else. And it's definitely a huge, one of our major issues is lack of activity for students and youth.
Well, I definitely believe that, Greg. And I think that it takes an athlete tutor like myself, educator, to be able to work with other athletes through the SAT and different programs and understand the fact that they have that mindset to be successful in the classroom because of athletics. It's they definitely go hand in hand with each other. Okay, so where is the best?
Yeah, I have a good example of that in the book. Plato founded the first academy, the first university, and that's the basis for every university in the world. But did you also know he was a competitive wrestler?
Interesting, yeah.
And he always advocated that you had to exercise your body as well as your mind to keep both in balance. You could only really achieve excellence if you worked in both your body and your mind.
No, that's excellent. Fantastic. So, Greg, one last question for you. Do you think that through this book and through this science and research, we can stop a lot of people from using these performance-enhancing drugs because they could see that they can do it naturally as athletes and get more and more natural athletes training for just to do the very best they can in all the sports that they play? Is that a hope for you, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is it's a competitive sport, and there's always people wanting to take a shortcut, but if they understood that they could achieve really great results with proper training and proper rest, I think they can. I think, you know, one of the issues in cycling is that athletes are competitive. They want to know that everybody's on a level playing field. And the issue with doping and cycling, it's regulation. So if you have one, it's a rule. And if you have athletes that are following the rules and other athletes that aren't, creates an unfair advantage. And in cycling, it's kind of like I always equate it to speeding. If you start losing your license and your insurance goes up, you're going to drive slower. And in cycling, it's needed. The drug controls are needed to keep the playing field level, because it's most people don't understand a lot of these world-class sports. It's not just a pill they're taking. It's a full pharmaceutical deployment. I mean, IVs, 20 different drugs. It's does tragic harm to a lot of these cyclists and athletes, way beyond just taking a steroid. They're using antidepressants. So there's a health issue that's really critical. And I don't think any athlete should have to be, you know, forced into doing that to compete in the sport they love. And I always want to see who the best athlete is, not the best pharmacist or the best doctor. So I do believe, there was doping in my career. I know there was people that, you know, rumors of this, people getting caught. You know, I had to train really smart, but I was very smart about my training. I recovered properly, and, you know, I would say that I was at a period where the real big performance-enhancing drugs weren't there. I don't know, you know, I can't judge riders in the 90s and 2000. I would love to believe I wouldn't do it because I, you know, would think I would have the willpower, but I see a lot of these great kids that get sucked into it and they end up doing it. And, you know, there's a lot of, nobody looks at, there's people look at the performance gains, but they're not looking at their afterlife and
yes.
some of the repercussions of what they do. So I think sports should be about personal achievement and challenging yourself. And if you do that, you want to learn more about how to train and do it properly, and you get more satisfaction about what you do.
Well, you absolutely achieved at the highest level, winning the Tour de France 3 times and basically showing specifically as a world champion that you are, and now giving back in a way of just giving information, letting people know that you can train hard, and then looking at both of you guys and your shape at your age and continue to show how important it is to exercise and stay healthy to continue to live a long and healthy life. So, Dr. Hom, where's the best place we can purchase your book with Greg's and find more information on you? Where can we go?
Okay, it's at greglemond.com. He has a link to our publisher, Elsevier Store. It's also on Amazon.com as either a Kindle or a paperback. It's also on sale at Barnes & Noble online. It's not at my Barnes & Noble brick-and-mortar store, though. I'm trying to get it sold there, but you can get it online just about anywhere.
The social media game is the days of the internet. That's the big thing now, you know, with the Amazon and all the different places to get it. And that's what's fantastic. And getting out there and getting the word out. And, Greg, you have a Twitter as well and Facebook that people can follow you as well. Am I correct, Greg?
Yeah, yeah. It's Greg LeMond. Yeah, but there's Twitter I'm not as active on. I'm not real active on Twitter. I have a Facebook account. But it's my website, GregLeMond.com, is where they could probably get the most information. But there's a Facebook. Yep, I have a personal Facebook, and then I have, you know, a more public one. So that's right.
All right. Well, fantastic.
I have an interesting statistic.
Go ahead.
I have an interesting statistic about our book. The Elsevier store, they sell 25,000 Elsevier book titles, but all through December and now January, our book is the number one featured book on their homepage.
Fantastic.
25,000.
That is fantastic. That's great. Yeah. So keep up the great work I'm definitely going to read this and then share this, especially with a lot of my athlete friends, because we understand the science just breaks it down so interesting for me as an educator. And then especially when I'm tutoring kids in biology, especially athletes, I can bring up some of this stuff. So thanks for educating me today. I appreciate that, guys.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us on the show.
All right. Well, take care, Greg, and take care, Dr. Hom. Good talking to you guys.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, take care. All right, see ya. All right, thanks. Bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. Are you looking for your son or daughter to be tutored in math, reading, or study skills? Remember to call 412-523-0289 for a free phone evaluation of your child, or email me at nhaley@totaltutor.org. You want your child to succeed in school. You don't want them to struggle anymore. You don't want to sit down at the homework table and just say to yourself, I've sat with my son or daughter for 5 straight hours. Call me and that will end. 412-523-0289. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show. What an amazing show we had today. A great way to start the whole 2015 off with a bang with two very interesting interviews, Greg LeMond and Dr. Hom. Very, very interesting. But I want to first go into Chris Levitt. Chris was an amazing, fun interview. Just always to get somebody from Bravo Television and to get somebody as high profile as that, that's what this network's all about. We come and we bring the people for you to listen to. These guys are people who are truly interesting people, and it's a lot of fun talking to him. And I really enjoyed his outlook for the 2015 real estate market. I'm just like excited to know that it looks like our economy's finally come back. And as an entrepreneur myself, and listening to him and listening to how he was able to grow his business, and that he was in the film industry, an entertainment kind of guy, and he went and decided to be a real estate agent, then became a broker. He educated us in so many different ways, as this entire show was education based, in my opinion, between Chris Levitt and Greg LeMond and Dr. Hom, that it was amazing. And I think that what Chris does is he brings an excitement to Million Dollar Listing Miami. And what a place to sell houses is in Miami. All right. And we love Miami thanks to the Miami Book Fair. Now, we're talking about Greg LeMond and Dr. Hom. Another one right down my alley, first entrepreneurship, then looking at specifically enough how he educated us and specifically the mitochondria. And to understand specifically that you got to rest between working out, and unless you're taking certain performance-enhancing drugs, it's not going to matter. It's going to be something that's going to be very, very complex to fight. If they're taking these performance-enhancing drugs, forget about it. They're going to have success, but we know it's going to be an adverse effect on the body. But if you recover and you train naturally, you could have the same success, hopefully. And maybe we got to clean up the sports more and more so we don't allow this drug thing to go on. And then I think also Greg suffered from ADHD and how biking really helped him through that, and sports in general, and how he loved to go work out and that helped him focus better. that just shows us that we can't get rid of things like gym class in school and things like this. And I thought it was a very interesting interview. You can go to TotalTour.net if you missed some of the interview and listen to it and click on the Greg LeMond interview. I hope everyone has a great week. We'll talk next week on the Celebrity Show, more education talk. But tomorrow, more great talk. Good day, everyone.